This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The recent targeting of children, particularly the beheading of young boys and girls, is an indication of the horror and how fast the security situation has deteriorated in Cabo Delgado.
That was Martin Iwi, who is watching Islamist insurgency in Mozambique unfold for the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria. Details coming up. Also, an attempted coup in Niger has been thwarted. And the U.S. has received the $335 million provided by Sudan to compensate victims of terrorism. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South Africans are breathing a sigh of relief after President Cyril Ramaphosa said they can celebrate the Easter holiday with very limited travel and gathering restrictions. However, many have raised concerns after the government failed to meet its target of vaccinating 1 million people by the end of today. Ramaphosa said this target could only be realized by mid-May. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
In an address to the nation yesterday, Ramaphosa said interprovincial travel remains permitted and curfew is still midnight to 4 a.m. Indoor gatherings have been increased from 100 to 250 people, while outdoor gatherings are now at 500 from 250. For this Easter gift, he said South Africans should thank themselves for putting up a good fight against COVID-19.
For the past 2 weeks, the number of new cases has remained relatively stable at around 1,200 new cases per day. The number of hospitalizations is declining, as is the number of deaths. Our national recovery rate stands at slightly higher than 95%.
Bishop Malusi Mbumlwana from the South African Council of Churches says they welcome the increased numbers, although allowing churches to fill half their venues would have better accommodated large churches.
For most churches, that number is perfectly appropriate. But there are mega churches that are 5,000 seaters, 6,000 seaters. They said we'll be comfortable with a max of 1,000.
All alcohol off-site consumption outlets would be closed during the Easter weekend. However, people can stock up until Thursday, while those wanting to drink alcohol in restaurants, shabins, and bars can still do so. The government has, however, come under fire for performing dismally in its vaccination program. It aimed to vaccinate up to 1 million people by the end of today, but has reached just over a quarter of that target. It now expects to complete the first phase of vaccinating 1.2 million health workers by mid-May. The target of vaccinating 67%, about 40 million of its population this year, has also hit a dead end. The second phase, targeting people over 60 and those with existing health conditions, will stretch until mid-November before the entire population can receive the jab. Matthew Parks is the parliamentary coordinator for the Congress of South African Trade Unions.
Government has to do much better. And the rationales, the excuses that government has given are frankly unacceptable and not convincing. We're seeing other African countries like Morocco and Egypt and even Seychelles moving very fast, and yet we are still scrambling around looking for the starting point.
Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says the delays are beyond the government's control.
The constraint we have to face on our side is that we have to be subjected to global supply chain issues. We have to also fight the manufacturing companies and get the contracts done. If there's anyone who could be frustrated and angry, is how I am between myself and how some of the manufacturing companies are doing.
The government says it is finalizing agreements to buy enough vaccines to inoculate 41 million people, but can't say when that will be accomplished. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The U.S. government recently designated a group linked to Islamic State in Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province as a foreign terrorist organization. In the past 3 years, terrorism analysts say about 2,700 people have been killed and nearly 700,000 displaced in violence linked to the group. They say the move by Washington could inspire efforts to end the insurgency, but will also create new counter-terrorism challenges. Darren Taylor reports.
Militants claiming affiliation to Islamic State, otherwise known as IS or ISIS, began attacking communities in Cabo Delgado in October 2017 and declared itself an enemy of the Mozambican government. Troops have been unable to control the insurgency, which seems to be escalating.
Nearly 100 violent events have occurred in which over 200 people have died between 1 January and 14 March this year.
Martin Ewe is watching the crisis unfold for the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria.
ISIS Mozambique is actually Al-Sunnah Wal-Jamaa, the militant Islamist group locally known as Al-Shabaab, which is believed to have been formed in Musimboada Praia in 2007, but which only began violent operations in early October 2017, when militants stormed police stations in Musimboada Praia.
Ewe says it's unclear what the militants actually want. They've said their aim is to improve the lives of impoverished locals, claiming the government doesn't care about them. Yet the group often murders and brutalizes the people of Cabo Delgado.
The recent targeting of children, particularly the beheading of young boys and girls, is an indication of the horror and how fast the security situation has deteriorated in Cabo Delgado.
The chaos is also causing other crises, with aid organizations reporting that almost 850,000 people need emergency food supplies in the province. Ewe says the militants are being led by a Tanzanian, Abu Yasser Hassan, who the U.S. government has declared a specially designated global terrorist.
There is very little information about Hassan. Even the Inspector General of Police of Tanzania does not even have information on who Hassan is. What we know so far is that he is between 38 and 40 years old, but nothing is known about his character, temperament, and philosophy. He's famous for leading the operation that captured the port of Musimboada Praia in northern Mozambique and the operations in Tanzania in the Mtwara region, neighboring Mozambique.
The insurgents are also committing atrocities in attacks on villages in southern Tanzania before escaping across the border into Cabo Delgado. Ewe says Washington's blacklisting of Hassan and ISIS Mozambique is expected to focus Africa, and especially southern Africa, on the group.
A key impact of the designation will increase U.S. involvement in the fight against terrorism in Cabo Delgado. This could benefit broader U.S. intelligence on ISIS and Islamist groups around the world, especially in Africa, such as Al-Shabaab in Somalia, Boko Haram in the Lake Chad Basin, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb.
He says Islamic terror organizations around Africa are feeding their allies in Mozambique with fighters and perhaps other resources. Hopefully, says Ewe, the U.S. designation will convince African governments, many of which up until now have labeled the violence in Cabo Delgado nothing more than a local grievance, that it's a serious terrorist threat.
Hence, there could be an increase in the support to Mozambique. It is also likely that regional institutions or regional organizations such as the Southern African Development Community, SADC, and the African Union could feel increased pressure to intervene in Mozambique. We saw that also with Boko Haram, where after the designation, discussion started in terms of the regional force.
Other observers say Southern African governments will think long and hard before becoming involved in the crisis in Mozambique, because if they do, the militants could launch revenge attacks on targets in their countries. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A new United Nations report says a French airstrike in Mali in January killed 19 civilians at a wedding. France has rejected the findings, saying the airstrike had killed several dozen extremists. For analysis, VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to Sahel expert Nadia Adam, who is a researcher for the Institute for Security Studies in Bamako, Mali.
The mandate of this team has already been discussed at the UN Security Council, so it was part of MINUSMA's work to conduct these investigations whenever there are alleged human rights violations in the operations of the security and defense forces on the ground. And from the methodology, it shows that, well, they've tried to the best of their ability to come up with the results. When the attack occurred, sources mentioned that an investigation is also ongoing by Mali and France, and it will be best to wait for the results of these investigations as well before making any conclusions.
Now, the French Defense Ministry has pushed back against this report. It says that several dozen extremists were killed, and it criticized the methodology of the report. How do you assess the French reaction? You know, are their arguments valid?
Well, to maintain their engagement in the region in an increasingly unpopular overseas military operation, French authorities must be very persuasive, both to the French people as well as to their Malian partners. And they're trying very hard, insisting on the neutralization of some of the leaders and members of violent extremist groups, which they present as decisive strategic achievements. So in this light, it's important for France to show results. The French Operation Barkhane has been quite unpopular both in France and in Mali for the past couple of months, even years. So France is, I guess, trying to have a better image of this intervention by trying to show the results they're having on the ground.
And last of all, do you think there might be changes to the French military intervention because of this report?
If there is a shift, like a shuffling in the way this intervention is conducted, it would be more in terms of transparency and accountability, which is not only valid for France, but all the other security and defense forces and partners working in the region.
That was Sahel expert Nadia Adam, a researcher for the Institute for Security Studies in Bamako, Mali, speaking with VOA's Jason Patinkin. The coronavirus pandemic has made a deep mark in Africa's large cities such as Johannesburg, Lagos, and Nairobi. But an estimated 60% of the continent's population lives in rural areas, and large-scale lockdowns have effectively left these areas sealed off. VOA's Anita Powell visited one small South African town to see how people there are coping with life under pandemic restrictions.
It's hard to see COVID-19 here in the town of Kamatsamo. Goats pick their way through a path that runs from the highway, the main thoroughfare in this South African town of some 23,000 people. On a recent day, most residents weren't diligently wearing masks outdoors, as is the law. But the pandemic is deeply felt here, say residents, who point not to death tolls, but to economic and social devastation. South Africa is the continent's epicenter, with more than 1.5 million confirmed cases and more than 52,000 deaths. Pakare Sambo is a bright 22-year-old with a dream. She wants to learn a trade and eventually set up her own carpentry shop. That idea flew out the window when the pandemic arrived, and she had to make different plans.
It's been a problem, like really problem, a big problem to me, because I can't continue with my carpentry studies. I just stopped, and I can't even start my own business because the money is too low. People are complaining they can't even buy this fruit. They are complaining, they say it's too much money.
Data about COVID's impact on Africa's urban-rural divide is still being gathered. But one recent study from a group of Nigerian and British researchers warns that rural African communities risk being left behind in the pandemic because of the lack of amenities like good road networks and clinics and hospitals. Freddie Nkosi, Democratic Republic of Congo country director at Village Reach, an NGO that focuses on remote, rural, low-income countries, says big efforts like vaccination campaigns are much more difficult in rural environments.
You need to keep the vaccines in the cold chain environments, and you need to train the people who will transport the vaccines. You need to train the people who will be using the vaccines, I mean the health workers. So getting all these different pieces of puzzles in a very short period of time, that's very, very challenging.
For a town like Kamatsamo, which is less than a day's drive from Johannesburg, that is doable. And for that reason, residents say they feel safer here than in the city. Supermarket worker Sam Limana.
It's better to stay in a small place because we have small people there than the big cities, because in the big cities there's a lot of people. Some of them, they don't know about COVID, they are stubborn, they don't know about, they don't care about that.
And security guard Zama Changela.
I think around rural area is much better than the city because there's no lot of people. I think it's safe to be in a rural area.
Rural African life has always been complex and resilient. This town has existed in some form for hundreds of years through wars, epidemics, and upheavals. Pandemic, in a way, is just a blip in its history. Anita Pell, VOA News, Kamatsamo, South Africa.
An attempted coup in Niger has been thwarted just 2 days before the historic inauguration of Mohamed Bazoum as president of the chronically unstable Sahel nation. The assailants, according to a Reuters report, were pushed back by heavy shelling and gunfire from the presidential guard unit. Sources did not say where the assailants went after they were repelled or comment on the whereabouts of President Mohamed Osman or President-elect Mohamed Bazoum. Former U.S. envoy J. Peter Pham to the Sahel tweeted that both men were safe. The government of Niger did not make any immediate comment. Bazoum's election is the first democratic transition of power in the West African state that has witnessed 4 military coups since independence from France in 1960. The U.S. Embassy in Niamey said in a statement it was closed for the day due to gunshots heard in the neighborhood and warned that the security situation remained fluid in the post-election period. U.S. Secretary of State Antony J. Blinken says Sudan has provided $335 million to compensate victims of the 1998 bombings of the American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania and the USS Cole in 2000, as well as the 2008 killing of USAID employee John Granville. Blinken said in a statement today that achieving compensation for these victims had been a top priority for the State Department. He said he appreciates Sudan's constructive efforts over the past 2 years to work with the United States to resolve these long outstanding claims. He says the U.S. looks forward to expanding its bilateral relationship with Sudan and to continue supporting the civilian-led transitional government to deliver freedom, peace, and justice to the Sudanese people. Zimbabwe is poised to be among the first countries in the world to issue citizens COVID-19 certificates, which will be linked to passports and identity cards. Arigando has the story.
The Minister of Health and Child Care says the certificates will be linked to the passports to travelers departing the country and will be required from arrivals in a bid to curb the incidence of fake COVID-19 certificates. The ministry says it has the records of people that have been vaccinated and that the new card will have security features which can be scanned and verified. The card will have a QR code for verification of information. Observers say it's unclear how many fake COVID-19 certificates are in circulation, but their very existence exacerbates the challenge of creating a secure regime. Zimbabwe's borders are currently closed to ordinary travelers. The rollout of vaccines has gotten off to a slow start. The ministry says 61,093 people have gotten the jabs, with 6,569 getting their second doses. The acting provincial medical director, Welcome Mlilo, says the certificate is going to be inevitable, with a few countries already creating some form of a COVID-19 passport, including Israel, China, Bahrain, the US, the UK, and the European Union.
So, in a sense, a vaccine passport is proof that you've tested negative or you've been protected against certain infections. So this is an old idea that is being packaged in a new way. For years, people have traveled to certain areas in the world. They've been asked to show papers or a medical passport or what has been called a yellow card. This was created by WHO to prove that the certain individuals would have gotten vaccines against diseases like yellow fever, cholera, and rubella.
Observers say COVID-19 passports would be useful in curbing the spread of the pandemic in the face of vaccinating the entire population. Itai Risike of Community Working Group on Health, CWGH, weighs in.
We can also learn from the discussions and the processes that are happening elsewhere. I think they are now at an advanced stage of making it mandatory for one to have a COVID-19 passport if you are to access public amenities such as shops, gyms, and so forth. So Zimbabwe definitely will now need to start discussions and dialogue on how this COVID-19 passport arrangement going to be, you know, implemented, and if ever it is going to be implemented.
The city of Blawaya started a vaccination program with China's Sinovac and Sinopharm vaccines that's targeting 110,000 residents. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Botswana, which is going through its worst period of the COVID-19 pandemic, has banned inter-district travel ahead of the Eastern holidays. The country is battling a rapid surge of the virus, with the death toll nearing 600, and is considering an extension of its state of emergency. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana's COVID-19 presidential task force team announced today that all interzonal travel is banned immediately. It said all valid travel permits which are required to travel within zones have been cancelled. The task force fears a surge in COVID-19 cases if people travel during the Easter holiday. After being praised for its initial efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus, the country experienced a surge in cases in early January when people returned from the festive season. Botswana has seen cases steadily climb from below 50 before Christmas to 568 this week. This has prompted the task force to halt travel except for essential service providers. Local tourism operators like Safari Lodge owner Aaron Undibetsi say they will lose out as they had pre-bookings.
We expected people to travel during the Easter holidays. We understand that there is a need to contain the spread of this disease. However, our industry has not been doing very well, and this only serves to hit us hard.
Botswana, a prime safari destination, has been hit hard with few tourists arriving from abroad. The country has turned to domestic tourism, but the recent local travel ban will squeeze the industry even further. On Tuesday, Botswana's parliament was expected to extend a one-year-old state of emergency by another 6 months. The government says the move is needed to fight the pandemic, but critics say it is crippling the economy. For VOA, this is Mgondisi Dube in Habroni, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I am Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international.